My name is Sally Berger, and I'm assistant curator in the Department of Film. I was very happy when Laura Bailey's, who was organizing this series on the campaign trail, asked the curators in the museum if any of us had ideas. And so I immediately shot back Shelley Silver's piece, which was not called Incomplete World at the time. It had a different title. But I just thought, oh, this would be really, really perfect. And Laura really, really loved it. And so that was the beginning. And I want to mention that we have two other... Shelley's work is launching this series on the campaign trail. And after that, we have Larry Fink, who will be in discussion with Elizabeth Biondi, the visual editor of The New Yorker. And he's going to discuss the photographs he took while on the campaign trails with Obama and Clinton. And that is on October 1st. And following that, on October 30th, we have journalist Laura Flanders introducing Marshall Reese and Anthony Montadas, who will also screen and discuss their political advertisements. And many of you may have, or some of you may have already seen their earlier editions of that, but every presidential election year, they gather together what's happening around advertising and add it to this series, which reveals a lot about political advertisements and the campaign trail here in the United States. I'd like to thank the Junior Associates of the Museum of Modern Art for their support of this program, as well as Laura Bailey's for organizing the whole series. Shelley Silver will say a few words, then we'll go on to screening Incomplete World, which is 53 minutes, and after that we'll follow it with a discussion with all of us. So, Shelley, welcome.
Hi, I'd like to thank you all for coming. I'd like to thank Laura Bayless and the Education Department for inviting me, and also Sally Berger for moderating the discussion and introducing me. It's a really wonderful thing for me to premiere this tape in New York City, where it was shot, and also at MoMA, where I have such a long history. I realized today that the first time I presented my work was in a series called Video Viewpoints, which no longer exists, in 1992. So I have a very long history with this hometown museum of mine. This film is really a film... I mean, now maybe I could call it a love letter to New York City. I think when I started it, it was this question of feeling very displaced and alienated from New York and the United States. And a way that I deal with this usually is to pick up my camera and take it out on the streets and see if it's true or not, if I should be staying in the city or if I should leave. And so I went out in the streets and did these interviews, and you'll see the 53-minute version of them. I'm from New York. My parents, who are in the audience, are from New York, and I think one of my grandparents was born in New York, so leaving New York would not have been an easy thing for me to do. One other thing that I wanted to talk a tiny bit about is this is the first film that I've made structured this way. It's really a film not based on story or argument. It's a film based on accumulation. And so it means that little bits add up to bigger bits, add up to characters, add up to themes. And so it was a little bit different for me editing the film, and I think it's also a different experience for you as a viewer reading or watching the film. So keep this in mind when you're watching it, and I hope you enjoy it. And I really look forward to the discussion afterwards, although unfortunately Bill Clinton will not be here tonight. He's in the building. But he's otherwise engaged, but I look forward to having the conversation with you and with Sally Berger. Thank you.
Let's see. Where to begin? This piece is really amazing to me because, you know, it talks about these core issues that we all think about and we mull over, but they, I don't know, sometimes they just circulate around in our heads, and we never find answers for them. And I think it's really interesting that the way you work in terms of, as you've talked about it, it's not a narrative structure, it's this accumulation of people talking about all of these ideas that are connected to America and living in America and what being an American means. And so I was wondering if you could just comment a little bit about how you chose the structure.
The original film was meant to be an essay film, which is to say that I was going to write much more about my own personal opinions and take on the situation, and the interviews were only going to be a small component of it. And so I shot, 30, 40 hours of amazing images of New York and people moving through the city, and shot a lot of interviews. And as I continued shooting the interviews, I got more and more passionate about it, because I had no idea that the interviews would work, that people would talk to me. You know, this is based on like reality TV, if they'd have anything to say, if they just want to be in front of the camera. And as I shot, I realized more and more how much people did have to say and how much desire they had to say it, to have a voice. And so when I sat down to edit, I thought, oh, well, yeah, I'll start with the interviews. And then every time I tried to add my own voice into it, I wasn't allowed. They wouldn't let me, because, again, it became so much for me about their voices. And in a way, my voice is also in it as the interviewer, selecting the questions and editing it. But so then I decided that the simplest way was just to follow the questions and to have the answers and to weave the different... I mean, and it seems like it should be simple, but it took forever to edit.
Well, we've talked, and you've talked to me about how the piece evolved into something, very different from what you started out with, but also how even with the interviews, that what you ended up choosing and how you edited them together really evolved as you went through this process of interviewing. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about the fact that how you actually interviewed and the help you had doing the interviews.
Right. There are, the people who helped me with the interviews, could you raise your hand? Sophia Pierre is here. Fritzi Brown is here. Jessica Peavy was here. I don't know if she's here right now. I had six people working on the interviews with me. And so if any of them want to interrupt at any moment to correct me or add, that would be great. And we went into the streets. We picked different neighborhoods, but always neighborhoods with a certain density of population. Because the one time we went to Staten Island, which does not have a density of population, it was very difficult to get people to speak to us. And we would just randomly ask anybody, excuse me, and it was a very vague entry, we're doing a documentary about New York, about the United States, would you like to answer a few questions? Most people said no, but a surprising amount of people said yes also, and then we would just begin the interview, and I did the shooting, and series of wonderful women did the interviews.
You had nine people?
Six people.
Six people.
Yeah. And each person, of course, did the interviews in a different way, had a different relationship with the people, but I've been doing this a long time, and I tend to, I hope, be very open and very friendly, which hopefully puts people at ease to talk to me, and to talk to us.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, people felt comfortable once they got engaged. And so that's a really remarkable achievement. And I do think one of the questions that Laura Bayliss was really curious about is, would you do this in another city? And I feel that so much somehow you're a New Yorker, and your love of New York and your knowledge about New York somehow really comes through in this piece. And I wonder, could you take it to another city?
I mean, I think that I could. I don't know, it would be completely different. I did do another interview-based project, street interview, called Former East, Former West, which was done in Berlin. I was there on a residency for a year, and again, in another situation that I didn't understand and wanted to find out about. And there, too, the interviews were very successful, I mean, in my opinion, because it was 92, 93, right after the reunification, and there, too, people had this huge desire to speak because the situation was changing. There was a lot of tension. I was most interested to do it in New York because it's my city and the people I live with, but also because of the diversity that I think you only get in New York, you know, where you listen to the people's names and they just seem like they're from everywhere. Yeah.
Were there any questions that completely surprised you? The answers to the questions completely surprised you?
Little surprises. I guess the biggest surprise for me was the last question, what are you most scared of? And I was surprised because people were so generous and so open. And, you know, I'm scared of a lot of the things that people said they were scared of also. But I don't think I would say it to a camera. And it was just such an intimate moment. And it was a question that people really liked because it was completely open. You know, I'm scared of ghosts, I'm scared of being lonely, I'm scared of being poor. I mean, you could answer it in whatever way. And there's one interviewer, Fritzi Brown, who's in the audience, who loved that question. And she, you know, like people, it was like an end of the long interview, and she would always get like the energy. And the last question, what is the one thing that you're completely, you know, most scared of? And then, yeah, that gave it a really good flavor, yeah. I hope it was useful for you, Fritzi, to ask that question, because I really love that, yeah.
Are there any people here who are?
There is. Could you raise your, hand if you, there?
And I'll just ask one more question, and then mm-hmm. we can throw it out to the audience. But I know what you originally called the piece, and I see how you've used that to kind of bracket your two titles, actually, mm-hmm. to bracket the film,
right.
Which I think is really lovely. So I don't know if you want to talk about that at all.
Yeah, the original title was Satisfaction, and I kind of love that title. I love titles with, like, one word. I did a film called Suicide. And for me, satisfaction, it's a kind of complicated word. I brought the etymology of it because it's not sort of a common etymology considering what it means now. In 1300, it meant performance of an act set forth by a priest or other church authority to atone for sin. And that satis means enough, and facere, I'm going to get the Latin wrong, is to make. And so it had to do with this kind of something owed, an obligation to another, or something that was enough to pay back or to be with. And I really like that title because it's changed so much. Now it's so personal, you know, are you satisfied, or the Rolling Stones. And I thought that that had a lot to do with their current moment when I was making it, that in a way, why aren't people more involved? And on the one hand, it seems like satisfaction. And then the other, the last question, what are you most scared of? That people are somewhat possibly destabilized. So this also makes them sort of hunker down and take care of their own personal life. But then I decided that satisfaction, A, everybody expected the Stone song to be played in it. And B, it kind of closed it down a little bit. And Incomplete World, I thought it opened up the meeting more and was a more poetic title, which I decided I liked better. Yeah, and also has that nice little payoff at the end when Sean kind of links it in, because he gave me the title. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really, it's a very, very beautiful. Mm. So, do we have any questions? Yes. And there are microphones actually being, if you could speak into those, because we record these conversations.
So marvelous, marvelous work. I just want to ask you, who are some of your influences? Like, where does some of the inspiration for this particular piece come from?
Yeah, I would go back to mostly the 1960s when... am I being picked up here? When it was the beginning of street interviews, when you had a small 16-millimeter camera and the ability to record synced sound. And Jean Rouch and Edgar Morin made a wonderful film called Chronicle of a Summer that they did in Paris. Jean Rouch is an amazing sociologist, anthropologist, and he decided to turn anthropology to Paris in the 60s. And they did street interviews, and they also did more personal interviews. And he's someone who I've been watching a lot. As well, Pasolini did a very interesting, I would say, a little bit more passive-aggressive film called Comizi d'Amore, which was street interviews done in Italy about, I guess the big question was, should we talk more about sexual problems? And so it was like a different slant, but it also is an amazing documentary, I think. Jean-Luc Godard also, in his fiction films, inserts street interviews, and it's just something that I've always been intrigued with because it's so available, and it's just a way of making connections with people that you wouldn't make otherwise. You know, it's completely random, or I would say the people select you more than I select the people, and it's immediate, and people, I think, do become very open because it's anonymous, or... You know, anyway, it's out on the street. It's not in their homes or whatever. And so those are a few of the influences. I mean, I have many, many other influences. But for this film in particular, I point to Jean Rouch. Yeah.
Yeah, wonderful. Actually, Shelley, you pointed out something really interesting to me about how, you know, at the end of Chronicle of the Summer, he actually has this reflexive point where the people who are in the film all sit in a room and talk about it.
Criticize it, yeah.
Yeah, criticize it. And I think, you know, Shelley, you talked to me about how your piece starts at a different point, really, and stays, it continues by leaving the question always to the people who are in the film.
Yeah, that's where I would say, especially the Pasolini, because the Pasolini, he had Moravia, he had a psychoanalyst sort of analyzing the people that he was interviewing. And so it was very authoritative, you know, like now we're going to look at, I mean, and he really made fun of a lot of Italian people. Even the Jean Rouch, I mean, you have this constant stream of Rouch and Morin commenting on the people. And what I felt very strongly with this film was turning the microphone over to them. And, of course, I have a certain amount of influence in the editing, but I wanted it very much to be made up of everybody else's voice and not mine. Yeah, and so this is a big difference than these other films where I feel like you have a voiceover, you have a sort of guide and a reference and a kind of point of power and authority.
Yes. In the middle and then in the back.
I guess Penelope? Yeah.
Yeah. In terms of your voice, some of the question you asked about, you know, do you feel responsible or do you... feel personally responsible. I think there was this kind of political, clearly a political kind of thrust that the film had. And I wonder, like, right now, between now and the elections, I'm curious about distribution and how you actually see the film, you know, in a context like this, or, like, would you ever think of maybe between now and the elections having it on YouTube and having people be able to see it? Because I think it could really sort of facilitate something interesting.
Right. I mean, this is the premiere, so welcome to the premiere. But now I would like to get it everywhere, like, for free, for any, you know, I just want it to go wherever. Yeah, to be very, very democratic. Yeah, sort of like, I'd love to hand it out like candy on the street. So if any of you have any suggestions, like YouTube is a good suggestion, you know, any community organizations anywhere, because I would really love, and it's a little late, you know, it just took a long time to edit, but now I really, really would love to get it out. There was in the earlier show, the 5 o'clock show, I was approached by a youth group in Harlem who want to take the film up there and have me up there for a discussion because they found it really, really interesting. So I'm, at this point, now that it's finally done, open to anything. Yeah.
Yeah, one of the things in it that kind of surprised me were how many people said they don't vote.
Mm, yeah.
And that is, I just think very interesting. And that question is really contextualized so well in the piece.
Yeah, and
why one should vote.
It didn't surprise me because, I've had a lot of friends who don't vote, and hopefully now they do vote. But, I knew the sort of argument or whatever. And, yeah, it's tough to hear because, as one man says, you know, that's really the only voice we have. Yeah.
In the back, and then we'll go to you.
Oh, I thought it was a beautiful film, Shelley, and it looks so great on the screen and so profound. And I think you made an essay film. I was thinking of the essay film we often think of as a personal documentary, personal voice, but this is a collective essay, and it's an essay about life today and the issues that face us today. And I would just wish that we didn't have such a hierarchical television system and that this could go on even late night on PBS, you know, or another station, and it'd be available to a lot of people right now. But thank you for your film.
Well, thank you, Barbara.
Yes.
I definitely think that talking about these issues and stuff is totally part of our responsibility as citizens and to ourselves and to the government. So that's awesome that you're contributing to that. And I was also shocked about how many definitely thought while watching the film that you could see the wheels in people's heads turning as you were talking to them. And I was one, especially that guy from Williamsburg, the beard stroking gentleman. And I was wondering if you thought that maybe by posing these questions to people and kind of forcing them to confront their own opinions about certain things, that if you felt like you were affecting that in a sort of positive way.
I mean, the questions sort of built one to the other, like, you know, are we responsible for the government we have? Do you vote? You know, it's so I was hoping for nuances, but also, I mean, certain contradictions that people would then rethink. And I guess I was hoping that for the audience, too, because when I watch it, I ask myself the questions that are being asked to everyone else. So it's sort of like you become to identify with certain people. But then, yeah, if you don't vote, then, you know, where does that lead to? And the question of responsibility, I showed it to a person, and they didn't like that word because it sounded like guilt. But responsibility, it comes from the word to respond, to answer. And so I see it more as being in a society and talking, to have a voice to answer to what's happening or answer to the questions, to answer to each other.
Yes, way in the back.
Well, I thought you did an amazing job with each person seeming like their own person. I really cared about each person. I thank you for that. I was so interested in what makes one person a person. I also had a question about your choices of sound editing every time it went to black. I had a fantasy that you managed to get in every single location in those black shots.
Yeah, the first, it's not a question, but this was one of the things that made it very, very difficult in the editing, because I did want to build personalities where you got to know people over the course of time, and that was really hard. That was really hard to do, and I'm glad if you think that was successful. The black in between the questions, I went through a lot of different, at first I wanted images of the different places where we shot, but that didn't work. It just, and so finally I had still images and that didn't work. And I said, okay, to just open it up to the sounds of the city. And I didn't try to get every place, but I tried to get almost every sound that I remembered when we were doing the interviews, or also, I mean, often during the interviews, you hear trucks going by, or, you know, just to add a kind of because otherwise it's quite, in a way, a claustrophobic film. You know, there's that one time where it pans over to the two kids, and it's like, wow, there's a world out there. And so I was hoping that the audio would function that way to bring in the city and to bring in the space where I couldn't feel like I could use the images because it just had to be the people. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, there was another question. Yeah.
I'm curious. I liked the sense of the variations of opinions that came, sort of flowed through. And I'm just curious about... to what extent the answers that you would have edited out, whether what we saw reflected the whole, regardless of the fact that some answers might have been taken out?
Yeah, the first time Sally saw this, I think it was 2.5 hours. So there were a couple of answers taken out. I took out the answers based on repetition. And sometimes people were difficult to understand because of language, or also you just catch people, you know, sort of in an off sentence, or sometimes you can't condense an answer, you know, you have to leave it be 5 minutes, or you can't cut it down. But I tried very much to get the range of the answers that we got and to be really rigorous about that. Yeah, to be really, really rigorous. And I mean, it was interesting because Brian Teer, who was the editing consultant, he's a wonderful poet, and three of the people who helped me with the editing were actually poets. And it, you know, at first they were like, we can't help you with this, we don't know the moving image, and I was just like, it's language. Believe me, you know, you are the expert here. And so I spent a long time with them about rhetoric and arguments, and also I didn't want to be manipulative. You want to be rhythmic, you want to build meaning, but I didn't want to really, you know, undercut someone or manipulate what they were saying. And so, yeah, that was really hard, and they were really, yeah, Maureen McLean, Brian Teer, and Francis Richard really put in quality time with me on the language. And I realize, you know, language is like a thread that goes through all of my work, but especially with this piece, because it was really built on language, because everybody looks good anyway. You know, there was no problem with, you know, I mean, people just look, you know, I just love the way they look. That language, like, was really the bedrock of this piece, yeah.
I was wondering if those people on the film know it's going to be a...
The question was, do the people in the film know that they were going to appear in the public?
I mean, we told people, yeah, that this was going to be a documentary we were making with the presumption that, yeah, we didn't say it was a student project or it was just research. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah. Or I hope so, but yes, yes, that should have been clear.
Were there any questions you asked people that just didn't work? That
just yeah, there were. Out? Yep, yep. Yeah, it was the pity of it, because when I started interviewing, as I said, I didn't think that the interviews were going to take such a presence in the piece. And so the interview was much shorter, and we, you know, I was sort of fishing. So we got a really bunch of great interviews at the beginning, but the questions changed so much, and I wanted the continuity of people throughout, that those are some of the people that had to be dropped. But also some questions work and then stop working, or some questions like the question of the draft really, or voting wasn't really an official question. And then it came up, and so we made it an official question. But it is really, I mean, I teach, and students ask me about interview questions, and I say you just have to try and then see what, you know, what interests people, what excites people, and how that works. So, yeah, there was one question that was, there was a wonderful question that I cut out, and I'm still, do you feel you have control over your life? And that was a really good question, and the answers were really good, but somehow it just ended up on the editing floor. And then there was another question that only was interesting to people up in Columbia University, which is, what is a story? Which I personally love that question, and it preceded the could you tell the history of the recent history of the United States as if it was a story. But it was a little bit, you know, a lot of Columbia students answering kind of scholarly answers. So that question also, yeah, got cut out.
That'll become a little 3-minute piece.
Right.
Or 5-minute piece.
Yeah, I really like the visual clarity and the portraits of the people. And I also like the quiet of the non-voice of the interviewer's question, that it was how you brought it out through the interviews, and how that mirrors maybe the audience silently questioning or answering that question also. I found it kind of a nice relationship. I was also curious when you introduced the film, when you first stood up, and you were talking about the idea of being a lifelong New Yorker and maybe an issue to stay or go, or to stay here. And could you talk more about that in terms of the relationship of making the film and how that motivated you in terms of the film?
Right. I would say first in the United States, the political situation and where, you know, for me personally, things aren't going in the direction that I want to, but many people said this, that, you know, that you feel without a voice, you can't protest, even if you protest, it doesn't get fair, et cetera, et cetera. And this feeling of, yeah, who am I sharing the country with? And who, you know, because it's always like, well, you know, we agree with each other, but those people over there, and why do they think that way? Because I think that when you ask them, it's a lot different than hearing polls and, you know, why people are for or against the war, or why people voted for Bush or didn't vote for Bush. I would say in New York, it's a more difficult question because, you know, the last bunch of years, New York has gotten more and more expensive, and I have felt more and more pushed out as an artist and as a person who doesn't make $1 million. And so, I get the feeling like the tenor of the city has changed so much, and even of artists has changed so much, that making money is good, being poor is bad, and that's sort of how the argument is framed rather than the art you make or the jobs you do or what you're trying to do with your life. So, I mean, I guess there too, when you feel pushed out of the city that you're born in, it sort of calls for, you know, not desperate measures, because this wasn't a desperate measure, but I really did feel like I had to reconnect with who I was living with and why I was here. And, you know, making this piece hasn't made it any easier financially for me to stay in the city, but it has given me much more of a desire to do so, because I think that, like what what I collected, I mean, this is really magical. I mean, these people, all of us here together, you know, I mean, there's something really magical about New York, and, you know, maybe it exists in other cities, but, you know, I haven't found one yet. Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's something about the diversity of voices and people coming from other places to answer these questions and the ways that they did. And something about, you know, doing it elsewhere also, that, you know, the answers might be quite different in places or more uniform.
And I don't know if people, you know, maybe people would have been as open and as generous as they were here, but somehow I think that that's something about New Yorkers, that if they stop and you're in front of them, there's just this engagement that, you know, I haven't necessarily felt in other places, yeah.
I think that's a wonderful note to end on. New York is a great place.
Thank you, Sally.
Shelley, it's a wonderful piece.
And thank you, Laura Bayless, and the projection crew. Thank you. And thank you so much for coming.